I thought for today we would talk about a halachic topic that relates to this week's parsha, Parshas Noach. And that is the issue of organ transplants. Many of you have probably seen in some of the Jewish newspapers that there's an ad that the Halachic Organ Donor Society has put in. And it's a collection of different pictures of the rabbanim who supported the work of the society. Basically what the society tries to do is it tries to encourage people to donate their organs after death for the benefit of someone else. So the question is, does everyone agree that this is the proper procedure? I mean, at first glance, it seems like a tremendous chesed. So does everyone agree that this is mutter, or perhaps there is some kind of a shayla related to this issue? So we know pikuach nefesh is docha kol haTorah kula. Pikuach nefesh is an important value of the Torah. To save someone's life is a very important thing. Of course, though, we can't save someone's life by taking another person's life. And even if we're going to forfeit the chayei shoah, the limited extension of life of one individual for the benefit of another person, the chora, that should be asur. Because not only are we mechabel Shabbos in order to save a person's chayei olam, in order to save his life forever, so to speak, for a long time, but even to save his life for chayei shoah, even for a limited extension of life, we're also mechabel Shabbos. So presumably, chayei shoah and chayei olam really are viewed as being equivalent. So how can we forfeit the chayei shoah, the limited extra few moments that one person can live, in order that someone else is going to have a much lengthier extension of his life? So to take out a heart or a liver, to harvest the heart or a liver from one individual who nevuch is suffering, a person who's very sick and he's about to die, to take out his heart or liver to save the life of someone else, l'chora, is highly questionable. Because even though we're going to save the life of the second individual, but how can we take the life of the first individual? Even though the first individual is only going to live chai yishah, he's only going to live a little bit longer, maybe another day or two or three or maybe a week, maximum, that's it. But to forfeit his chai yishah for the benefit of the chai olam of the other individual seems to be questionable. Of course, the answer is, if we take out the organs after the first individual has passed away, what's the problem? That's the ultimate chesed. Here we'll be saving the life of the second individual. We're not taking the life of the first individual, so everything should be fine. The problem is, from a practical standpoint, it doesn't work. The way the doctors explain, there are certain organs that you have to harvest before the person actually dies. Or better yet, to put it more precisely, before the first person stops breathing. Once the person stops breathing, so then the oxygen, if you deprive the organs of oxygen, so then these organs can't survive for any extended period of time. The heart and the liver apparently are very sensitive organs, and if the person stops breathing, even for a few minutes, you're just going to lose them. So if you have the two people right there next to each other, so then maybe it's possible to somehow cut out the heart or cut out the liver in the few moments that there's no oxygen being sent to those organs. But if there's any sense of distance, if there's any distance involved, it's going to be impossible. So that's why the problem emerged. Even in secular society, the problem emerged. How exactly are we going to be able to harvest these organs to give them to another individual? Is this practical problem that if a person is not breathing anymore, so then the organs are not going to be oxygenated appropriately and they're going to die. So we're not going to gain anything if we wait until the first person, so to speak, stops breathing or the first person dies. So this was true. This was true a number of years ago. It was true 50 years ago, let's say. Why? Because 50 years ago, a person stopped breathing, he died. He died, and there was no way to maintain a person's respiration after he couldn't independently breathe. But now that we have a respirator, now that the ventilator was invented, so now we can keep a person breathing for a longer period of time than he himself could breathe, even if he can't breathe independently, but we can artificially enable him to breathe. So now the question was brought up, this person who is breathing via the agency of the respirator, okay, that the respirator might be putting oxygen into his organs, but is he defined as being alive? You could put oxygen into the lungs of a person who's dead as well, just like you could put oxygen into a balloon. You could put oxygen into a person who's dead as well. So should we define this person as alive? Or maybe we shouldn't define him as alive. So in the secular world, in the medical world, I think it was Harvard Medical School put together a whole commission to decide exactly when a person is dead. And they came out with the famous Harvard criteria. The Harvard criteria was that if a person is brain dead, which means that not only is a person brain damaged, but his brain stem is no longer functioning, meaning not only the area of the brain that controls motor movements and intelligence, etc., not only is that part of the brain dead, but even the brain stem, which is the lower part of the brain, the brain stem which controls respiration is also dead. So the Harvard criteria determined, they paskined, that a person who is brain dead, in the sense that his brain stem is also dead, so since he can't have any independent respiration, his respiration is dependent on the ventilator, that person is defined as dead. So if we harvest organs from that individual, we're not killing another person in order to save the life of the second individual. We're not killing this person who is Nebuch, who is going to pass away in a short while anyway. We're not killing that person in order to save the other person. The question is, what does the halacha say about this circumstance? A person who is brain dead, someone whose brain stem can't function anymore. They do certain tests. They used to do, I think, electrical impulse tests, and they have certain other tests that can determine whether there's any blood perfusion. Is the blood getting into that brain stem? Complicated tests. But if this individual is what we call halachically brain dead, so does that mean that he's dead al pidin? And the fact that the respirator is pumping oxygen into his lungs and his organs can be oxygenated via that process, that doesn't mean he's alive. He could be halachically dead, but his organs can be kept alive even though he's halachically dead. So should we assume he's halachically dead, or should we say no? The fact that the brainstem is dead does not necessarily mean that this person is halachically dead. Even if he can't have independent respiration, maybe nevertheless we should consider him to be alive. This is a very, very serious question. So the first place to look is the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Pei Hei, is actually talking about that issue that we mentioned at the outset, and that is, when are we Mechal Shabbos to save the life of an individual? Mishnah in Yuma, Daf Pei Gimel, talks about Mefakhanes Agal. There are certain circumstances when, even on Shabbos, we can unearth a person who's been smothered, who's been covered by a building collapse, let's say. Right? If there was a Mapolas, the building collapsed, and the person is under the Gal, he's under the heap of stones. So when can we be mefakeh hasagal or not? The Mishnah sets forth the basic principle that we're mefakeh hasagal even lechal as a Shabbos, because pikuach nefesh is docha kol atarakul, it's even docha is a Shabbos. So the Gemara in Pehei in Yuma is trying to figure out how long do we still try to save this individual? When we find the person and we take his vital signs and we try to figure out is the person alive or not, so where do we have to be bodeg? Where do we have to check this individual to determine if he's actually alive? The Gemara in Yuma, do I have this in the Malachas? No, the Gemara I didn't put in. I put it into the original Malachas, but I didn't photocopy it to you. But the Gemara in Daf Pei Hei quotes a Braisa. There are two deis in the Braisa. Until where do you have to be bodeg? Until where do you have to check the person? You find the person, he's under a pile of rocks and it's Shabbos, so you certainly have to try to uncover his head, to try to figure out if he's still alive. So until where do you have to be bodeg? So one opinion is that you have to be bodeg until the chotem, until his nostrils, until his nose. The other opinion is that you have to be bodeg until his lave, until the heart. So presumably the machlokas is you have to be bodeg to see if he's breathing. Well, you have to be bodeg, you have to check him out to see if his heart is still pumping, if his heart is still beating. What's the machlokas? So the first opinion, first the Gemara suggests that maybe the machlokas of these two opinions is from where was the person created? From where is a person created? Where is a person's creation as a fetus begin? If we understand from where he begins his development, so maybe that will determine what's the primary sign of life of a human being. So they call it different sukkah. Maybe a person begins his development from his head. They call it a pasuk to that effect. Then the Gemara suggests maybe a person begins from his belly, from the heart area. So the Gemara then concludes, no, maybe le'inyan yitzira, everyone agrees that a person begins from the heart area, from the middle. A person begins from the middle and then branches out in either direction. But le'inyan pikuach nefesh, there's a machlokes. Meaning even if you assume that a person's development as a fetus inside his mother begins from the middle area, not from the head, but maybe le'inyan pikuach nefesh, everyone is moda, the ikar chiyusa ba'apehu. That's the lashon of the Gemara. Maybe everyone is moda that the ikar chiyusa, the primary sign of life, is ba'ape, is in his nose. How do we know that? The chsiv, as it says in this week's parasha, parashas Noah, kol asher nishmas ruach chayim ba'apa, mikol asher becharavah meisim. That of the mabul, all the people who had a nishmas ruach chayim ba'apa, they were breathing, they died. So don't you see that kol asher nishmas ruach chayim ba'apa, that the ruach chaim of a person, the neshama, is a function of the ruach chaim va'apav. It's a function of the breathing. So the Gemara concludes that maybe everyone agrees regarding the yetzira that a person is actually created from the middle, but the machlokas, the reason why there's one daya, Abishol holds that you both got chotma. Why is the chot and why is the nose so important? Because the pasuk in Parshas Noach, the pasuk seems to indicate that when it comes to ikir chayuse the adam, that's ba'ape. It's not believing. That's what the Gemara says. So at first glance, if you look at this sugya, the impression you get, since we paskin that yevodek ad chotmo, the impression you get is that the primary sign of life is breathing. What does that mean? Does that mean if the person holds his breath, he's dead? He's not breathing, so he's dead? Obviously not. If we do CPR on the person, so he was dead, but now we brought him back to life, it's a little strange to say that. Right, so how do you define breathing as being the primary sign of life? So apparently what that means is, if a person has an irretrievable stoppage of breathing, so then we'll call him dead. But if we can bring him back, if we can bring back the breathing, so then even though he's holding his breath for a little while, or maybe he needs CPR, he needs to be resuscitated in some way, that doesn't mean he's dead. His breathing can start again. But if he can no longer have independent respiration, if he no longer has the power to breathe any longer, so then perhaps based on this Gemara, we should define the person as dead. This is exactly what some poskim suggested, that maybe this Gemara actually dovetails with the Harvard criteria that brain death is really halachic brain death. The halacha recognizes that if a person is brain dead, that is significant. Why? Not so much because of the brain death per se, but if his brain stem is dead and now he can't have independent respiration, so based on this Gemara, we should treat him as dead. Because you see, the Gemara assumes that the ikar chiyuse de adam is ba'ape, that's how we paskin. Right? We paskin that yevodek ad chotmo. So that seems to indicate that if a person is no longer breathing, he should be considered dead. So the way that we've refined that definition, it's not simply the person's not breathing, but the fact that a person will never breathe on his own ever again. So if he no longer has the ability to have independent respiration, maybe we should treat him as dead. So even though the ventilator is helping him breathe, that's not independent respiration. Maybe we should suggest that that's only like a dead person being thrust oxygen into his lungs as well, or putting air into a balloon. Maybe that's not necessarily called being alive. So this is what some of the poskim suggested, that halachic brain death, if the brain stem is dead, not just the main part of the brain which controls intelligence and motor function, etc., but the brain stem is dead and the person can no longer have independent respiration, so maybe we should treat him halachically as dead. Simcha.
I mean, this is kind of like a medical question, but I guess physically, what is the advantage except to save the organ so things don't respirate? If he's dead and he has no shot of going back to the normal function, so what do you gain by keeping him alive?
Well, you keep him alive because now the organs will be oxygenated. You're not keeping him alive. You're saying you're keeping
his organs functioning.
Right.
But if he's dead, then he's dead. What? Why would you want?
But is there any issue to keep him alive for a few minutes longer if I'm not going to touch him?
That's it. But he's not
there's
alive.
Another. No, not
organs
to keep him alive.
Are alive.
Is there any iser to keep oxygenating his organs, to pump oxygen into his lungs in order to save the life of another individual? Presumably
I mean,
not. If I'm not touching anything, he's been on a respirator, let's say, for a week or for a week and a half. If I'm not touching anything, the way that the respirators work nowadays, I think there's no need to clean them out. It used to be that the respirator could work, I don't know, for a day or two or whatever, and then they'd have to stop the respirator to clean it out. There's a whole discussion if you really should hook him back onto the respirator. If he's really dead, so then once he's disconnected from the respirator, maybe you shouldn't put him back on. That's a totally different discussion. We're not going to get into that. But if he's just on the respirator, nowadays I think the respirator just cleans itself.
People ask this question, even if the guy's not intending on donating his organs, just initially to put him on the respirator.
It's a different shy.
What's the point of putting him on the respirator?
It could be that there's no point at all. In fact, it could be us to put him on the respirator. If he's not the lumos, if he's going to pass away in another day, let's say, the doctors feel he's not going to last for more than a few hours. So then he would be what we call a doses. And it could be that at that time, you're really not supposed to touch him, not supposed to do anything. If you could save the ghost's life, or if you could extend his life a little bit longer, let's say you're going to extend his life another week. So that's not a go sense necessarily. But so maybe you should put him on a respirator.
Putting a respirator, is that considered extending his life? Because we're saying if you put on a respirator, he can't breathe on his own. So then if he can't breathe on his own, then it's not extending his life.
So
it's just
the
extending
truth,
his organs.
There are certain cases where someone is not a go sense, but he is ill, and he's put on a respirator because they hope that ultimately they'll be able to wean him off. There are many older people that sometimes they have shortness of breath. It's hard for them to breathe. So the reason why they're put on the respirator is not because they want to harvest the organs to give to someone else. No one's harvesting organs of an older person. The case of organ transplants is only, chas v'shalom, a person is in a car accident or something, a young, healthy person with a strong liver and a strong heart, those are the kinds of organs that we try to harvest. But the older person, sometimes they have shortness of breath, especially if they have a pneumonia, if they're sick or something. So you put them on a respirator. Make it easier for them to breathe. I mean, normally they'll give them an oxygen mask initially to help them breathe. But if they really can't breathe, then they'll put them on a respirator to help them breathe. But the hope is that you'll be able to wean them off. There is no hope that you're going to wean them off the respirator. I'm not so sure that there's a fee to put them on to begin with. So basically what you're doing is you're saying the person is going to be on a respirator forever at that point. I mean, not forever. At a certain point, the organs start to die. You know, the organs get weak enough that they malfunction, and that's the end of it. You know, a person has a certain sepsis infection throughout the body. I mean, people die even when they're sitting on a respirator. So the lungs will continue to go up and down, but nothing is happening. It's clear that the person is dead. But the hope when you put someone on a respirator initially is that you'll be able to wean them off. But if you can't wean them off, that's a real shaila whether you should put them on the respirator or chatchila. Yes.
If you have the hope to wean them off,
then that's what I'm talking about over here. We're talking about a person who is perfectly healthy, except the fact that he's brain dead.
There was some accident, a drowning accident,
a car accident, or something that his brain is not functioning anymore. But his organs are perfectly fine. So as long as we keep oxygen coming to these organs, we'll be able to keep them, so to speak, alive to be able to give them to someone else.
So there's definitely no hope of
if the brainstem is dead, the doctors say there is no hope. That's what they say. That's the medicine. I'm not going to argue with that. Yes?
What's the fear with regards to coronation of Shabbos? Do you have any fear at all? Like
in terms of what? What do you mean?
If the building collapses, do you have any fear for coronation to get
out? No, you wouldn't be Mechal Shabbos for Kavod HaMeis. I mean, Kavod HaMeis is an important... is an important issue, but the Gemara says once they're pretty certain that he's dead. Not pretty. Once they're certain that he's dead, Yani Chuvu, they just leave him after Shabbos. They'll deal with the mace, but they don't do anything on Shabbos. So first thing from this Gemara, if we pass like the first day, that you're supposed to be bodek until the chotem, it sounds like breathing does play a role. Breathing is the primary sign of life. So if we refine that definition just a little bit, to say that if a person can't have independent respiration any longer, his brainstem is dead, so maybe he should be defined as dead. The problem is that from Rashi and the Gemara and Yuma, you don't get that impression. I wish I had put this Gemara on the Maamar Kamos to actually give you the Rashi to look inside with me. Let me read to you some of the words of Rashi. Rashi and that Gemara says the following: Ad heichan hu bodek, until where does the person check out? Until where should you uncover the building? If he's doma lemeis, she'eno mezes evara. The person is similar to a dead individual, that he's not moving any of his limbs. Why did Rashi have to say that? Rashi says, until where do we check out this individual to see if he's alive? The Gemara says, until his chotem. So Rashi says, if he's doma lemeis, he's similar to a mace, that he's not moving any limbs. What is Rashi getting? So the Chacham Tzvi and some other Achronim are medayik from Rashi. But you see from Rashi that breathing is not the actual sign of life, in the sense that breathing is not the koveya of chayim or mavas. It's not that lack of breathing defines a person as dead. It's not a siba. It's a simen. It simply indicates that something else is going on. It's not that we know. It's not that this is the koveya, that breathing or lack of breathing will determine whether a person is alive or dead. It's that if a person is not breathing, so then that's part of the picture that indicates to us that he's dead. But the actual koveh of mis is not the lack of breathing itself. That's why Rashi had to add that if he's Dama Lemaisa, if he's like a Maisa, he's not moving any of his Evarim, and some even go further. They say Evarim, what does that mean? So at first glance, when you hear the word Evarim, you think about his arms and his legs. I mean, that's pretty obvious. Why should I assume if he's moving his arms and legs that he's dead? Others say, no, Rashi means all of his Evarim, both of his Evarim Chitzonim and his Evarim Panimiyim, meaning if any of his inner limbs, which we call organs, if any of his organs are still functioning, if you feel something, his heart is beating, so then there's no reason to believe that he's dead. Rashi is saying, if ostensibly he looks like he's a dead person because he's not moving any of his Evarim, both his Evarim Chitzonim and his Evarim Panimiyim, so then you bodek by his chotim, you see if he's breathing. If he's not breathing, so you can assume that he's dead. But what's the koveh of misa? Is the koveh of misa the lack of breathing? The Chacham Tzvi suggests that from Rashi you see that that's not really the case. Rashi is saying that the lack of breathing is a very important proof. It's a good simon, but it's not a siba. That's not the koveh of misa, the lack of breathing. But rather it's a good simon that he's probably dead. And that makes a lot of sense in the context of when Rashi was written, in the context of the Gemara. A person wasn't breathing, so obviously he's going to be dead because all of his Evarim are not going to be able to function. They don't get oxygen, they're going to die. So it's not the breathing itself that is Koveya Misa, according to Rashi, it would seem. But rather, it's the fact that his other Evarim are not working. Or to say this better, if his heart is still working, maybe we should consider him alive, even though he can't breathe independently. Because it's not the breathing, it's that the breathing is a good indicator, it's a good simon that he's probably dead, because if his heart is not oxygenated appropriately, so his heart's not going to be able to function. But maybe the heart is really the ikar, it's just that what the Gemara is saying is that if you want to determine if someone is dead, better to check by the chotem. If he's not breathing, the stomach is going to be dead. And then the Medayik from another Rashi as well, Rashi goes on to say the following. Ad chotma, the Tanakama of the Brisa says that Yebodik ad chotma, Yebodik until the nose, Vim ein chiyus bechotmo, says Rashi, if there's no chiyus in the chotem, there's no sign of life in the nose, she'eno motzi ruach, he's not breathing, vadai meis, he's definitely dead, v'yanichu, and then you can leave. Vadai meis. Now, if you were to say that lack of breathing defines a person as dead, that's the siba. That is the definition of death, lack of breathing. Life means a person was breathing on his own, and lack of breathing defines death. So why does Rashi have to say vadai meis? He should say, Harehu meis, Dino kemeis. Rashi doesn't say that. He says, Vadai meis. If he's not breathing, so Vadai meis, he's certainly dead. What does that mean, he's certainly dead? Meaning that's proof positive. That's the best proof that he's dead. Because his heart's not going to function. His organs are going to stop functioning. If he can't breathe, so obviously he's going to be dead. Vadai sounds like a raya. Vadai meis, he's definitely going to be dead. Not that Harehu meis, this is defined off Edin as death. So even though the Gemara would seem to imply that lack of breathing defines a person as death, that's the koveya of Misa, from Rashi you don't get that impression. Rashi doesn't seem to say that that's the Siba to define a person as dead, but rather it seems to be a simon, right? Like the Kelza Chakira, as we describe. It's a simon, it's a good indicator that he's dead because his blood is not gonna carry oxygen to the organs, so all of his organs are going to die. They bring a raya from the continuation of the Gemara. We don't have to go into all the different rayas. Further Rashis, there are other Rashis that seem to indicate this. From Rashi, you get this clear impression. The Rashi holds that the Gemara in Yuma is not to be understood, pshuto, that the whole machlogos was, what is the koveya? Where does life come from? And that's what the Lashon Gemara sounds like. Iker chiyusa ba'apehu. Sounds like the primary chiyus, the life of a person, is in his nose. But apparently, that's not true. Rashi doesn't assume that that's what the Gemara means. It means Iker simen lechiyusei ba'apei. The primary sign of life, the primary indicator of life, is if he's breathing. If he's not breathing, we know that he's going to be dead. Not because the breathing itself is the koveh, means the lack of breathing means that he's dead. But rather, that if he's not breathing, then we have every reason to believe that his organs are going to be dead as well. The Chasam Sofer in Tshuva made this idea famous. He doesn't quite quote the Rashi. This Tshuva I think we do have, yes. This is the first page that I tried to get for you from the Bar Ilan response program. The Chasam Sofer quoted in the Pisrei Tshuva in Yeredeia, in Hilchos Avelos, and in Shin Nun Zayin, it's a cotton hour, an interesting Pisrei Tshuva. The Chasam Sofer, in the middle of a long Tshuva about a somewhat different topic, I mean, it's certainly related, in the middle of a Tshuva, he makes a very important comment about the definition of death. That Tshuva was actually discussing the following issue. There was a case in the Chasam Sofer's time of an individual who they thought was dead, and they buried him. And then, after a couple of days, he emerged from the dead. He was never dead. He emerged from his kever. I'm not exactly sure how he did it. He must have been a very strong guy. But they buried him with the ark and everything in the ground. Maybe they buried him without the ark, so that's how he was able to dig himself out. I guess when there's a will, there's a way. So he got out of the kever. He frightened everyone in town. But based on this, the government in the area made a takana that you can't bury people until after 3 days. Meaning if you think they're dead, you got to wait another 3 days to make sure that they're really dead. Better yet, you have to wait the 3 days, because then after 3 days, the body starts to disintegrate, and the skin starts to disintegrate, then we know for sure that the person is dead. So there's a whole uproar in the Jewish community. How can they do this? There's a mitzvah to be kovar asameis, you kovar tikvareinu by yom ahu, we're supposed to bury a person that day. You're not supposed to be nailing asameis, you're not supposed to leave the mace over. There's a lav, there's a mitzvah. How can we not bury the mesim for 3 days? So Moses Mendelssohn, who was one of the spokesmen of the Jewish community, of the broader Jewish community, of the Reform part of the Jewish community, even though I think he was a Shomer Torah Mitzvah himself, I think he was erudite, I think he knew something. So he wrote a tshuva. He actually wrote a tshuva to try to justify what the government had done. He said, look, V'chai Bahem tells us that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kol HaTorah Kula, so you have to be careful. All the government wants us to do is to make sure the person is dead, that we shouldn't bury someone who's still alive. So he thought that not only was it mutter, it's a mitzvah. So a lot of the Achronim of the time disagreed vehemently with him. The Chasam Sofer wrote a tshuva, but they're covered. He wasn't involved in the politics. I'm not interested in discussing the politics here either. But the Chasam Sofer wrote a tshuva in which he said he thinks that logic is wrong. Thinks the logic is wrong. Because this case is 1 out of 1,000. It's even less than 1 out of 1,000. He said it's so unlikely to occur, it's so rare, that that's not Bechlav Pikuach Nefesh. When do we define something as Pikuach Nefesh? That's only if it's at least less than 1 out of 1,000. If it's 1 out of 1,000 or less than that, it's less common than even 1 out of 1,000. He says, that's not called Pikuach Nefesh, I'll be dead. So even if it might occur, but you're not Mechuyiv, you wouldn't be Mechuyiv to Michal Shabbos for such a circumstance. And there would be no violation of the mitzvah's kvura if you would bury the individual even before 3 days. It's very rare, the Chasam Sofer says, that the person is going to be able to wake up from the dead, so to speak, after you bury him. So he thought it wasn't an issue whatsoever. So in the middle of that tshuva, he discusses, well, what is death? What do we need to determine in order to see that the person is dead? So he says, it's clear in halacha that lack of breathing can determine for us that the person is dead. And he says, those poskim, the poskim that we have, who've said that lack of breathing determines death, he said, maybe there's somech on the Gemara in Yuma. That's the first underline that I have you. Actually, that's the only underline on that page. He says, Osha somech atzman akra kol asharua chayim ba'apo v'hakol toli v'neshimas ha'af v'kemavur b'yuma pehei amad alif. And the Rambam and the Torah Shulchan Aruch passed in that way. So maybe there was somech on that Gemara. And then he goes on, a couple of paragraphs later, when he concludes, he says the following. Look at the last paragraph of that Chasam Sofer, if you have the page. He says, Aval kol sha'acha shemutul ke'evan domein ve'ein bo shum defika, that a person is mutul ke'evan domein, he's like a rock that's not moving, that's not doing anything. Ein bo shum defika, there's no beat, presumably no heartbeat. Vim achaka ach botel ha'neshima, if after that his breathing stops, then we have the words of our Halakha Torah, Holy Torah, that says that the person is dead. See, look carefully at the Chasam Sofer. Even though initially he quotes from the Gemara Yuma that lack of breathing will determine a person is dead, but he adds a very important point. What are the two words that he adds? He's mutl kewat ke'evan domen. Mutl ke'evan domen. It's not enough just that the person is not breathing, but he can't be moving either. This seems to harken back to the Rashi, that he has to be double the maze, he's not mazes evar of klal, he's not moving any of his limbs, any of his evar pnimium either, he's domen ke'evan. That's what the Chasam Sofer seems to be saying. So according to the definition of the Chasam Sofer, brainstem death should not be sufficient. Just because a person is dead, just because a person's brainstem is dead, if his heart is still beating, he's not mutl ke'evan domen. So both according to Rashi and the Chasam Sofer, presumably he should not be considered dead. There are others who add on even further. They say, how can we say that respiration determines a person's death? And if a person can't have independent respiration, he's defined as dead. There are other ailments that people can suffer from. They can't have independent respiration, and they're perfectly functional. It used to be a terrible disease called polio. Baruch Hashem, there's a vaccine for polio, and we don't really hear about too many people suffering from polio, if at all. Polio used to be a disease that ravaged a person, that destroyed his lungs, to the point that they had to breathe on what they call an iron lung. The person had no independent respiration, yet they were highly intelligent, they were able to read books and converse. They were much more with it than a lot of sick people. So don't you see from that that lack of independent respiration does not define a person as dead? I mean, how can we define the person as dead? He's suffering from polio and he could be on an iron lung for 30 years or whatever. Right? So how can we define the person as dead? He's perfectly functional, except for the fact that he can't breathe on his own. So independent respiration by itself seems to be a very strange definition for life and death. Moshe Feinstein, in a tshuva in Yerader Chelek Beis, this is the first piece, the first Igros Moshe that I have for you on that next page, the one with the two Igros Moshe. Moshe writes as well that he thinks it's very difficult to define the chotem as the life-giving organ of a person. He says even when the Gemara said that, it didn't mean that it's the life-giving organ of the person. Clearly, he says, the brain or the heart are much more important. Those are organs that are much more integral to the life of the person. All the Gemara means is that the chotem is the makor. That's the source for the oxygen that a person gets in his system. But it's the moach and the lev that really are giving chios to the person. That's what he assumes is a davar pashut. Again, he doesn't quote the Chasam Sofer, but he really seems to be saying. He seems to be saying something similar to the Chasam Sofer, something similar to the Rashi and Yuma. So even though initially from our first blush with the Gemara and Yuma, the impression you get is that lack of breathing should determine a person to be dead, should define a person as being dead, with Moshe, the Chasam Sofer, and all the way back to Rashi, many Rishonim and Achronim seem to assume that it's not the lack of breathing per se, but rather the lack of breathing is a good indicator that the person is dead because his heart's not going to function, his other organs are not going to function. But if we could figure out a way of artificially oxygenating the person's organs, even if he's not breathing independently, maybe we should be able to consider the person alive. Why should independent respiration be the absolute koveya of Misa? Yes.
I have two quick questions. So Moshe isn't saying necessarily that all the organs, I mean, like the heart has to keep going. He's just saying that the breathing is not the end-all, be-all. Is that what
right.
he's saying?
Versus well, he actually does say that the moach and the lev should be viewed as the primary organs of the body. That really defines a person.
Well, what if you have a lev going but the moach is not going? Like that's the.
So he would probably say that both of these primary organs have to be dead in order for the person to be dead. Yeah,
okay.
I think so. If his lev is still going, so even though his brain is dead, but if his lev is still going, maybe he should be considered alive. There are others who point out that there are other issues to consider as well. And that is that the doctors have found that not every part of the brain is dead just because the brain stem is dead. You know, before we discussed that even if the main, what's the main part of the brain called? The cerebellum?
Cerebellum.
So if the main part of the brain is dead, it doesn't necessarily mean the brain stem is dead. Well, even if the brain stem is dead, there's some part of the brain called the hypothalamus. Yeah, did I get it? Okay, good. The hypothalamus apparently regulates body temperature. So the hypothalamus is not always dead, even when the brainstem is dead. So here you have a person whose body temperature is being regulated by his brain. He doesn't have independent respiration, but can we define the person as dead? That's what other postulants point out. This was only determined later. I think initially when they defined brain death, they didn't know of all these other tests, but they found that there's still something going on in the brain. So just because he can't breathe independently, that doesn't necessarily mean that his brain is really dead. Is his brain really dead? So if you take Reb Moshe's approach, that the brain is one of the primary functions of the body, so why should I say independent respiration is the koveh at all? It's not that independent respiration is really the key. It's that his brain has to be alive. His heart has to be alive. If both the brain and the heart are dead, so then he's viewed as dead. But if I can show you that part of his brain is still functioning, if his hypothalamus is still functioning and he's able to regulate his body temperature, is this guy really dead? Maybe he shouldn't be dead even if I can do the tests on the brain stem and determine that the brain stem is completely dead. That's what other poskim suggest. I think Rabbi Bleich writes that in an article. So, because this is so, this is a very complicated issue, obviously. There are many poskim who suggest that there are problems here. Other poskim suggested, based on the simple shot in the Gemara and Yuma, that there's no issue at all. So there's a lot of give and take between different poskim. This is a big issue. There's a lot of politics in this as well, which we're not going to discuss. So, just to say it simply, there really are three shittas when it comes to halachic brain. There are some who claim it's absolute; it's an absolute determinant of death. Halachic brain death, meaning the brain stem is dead. That means a person can't engage in any independent respiration. That person is considered to be dead, and therefore it will be mutter to harvest any organs from that person to give them to someone else for the piguach nefesh of the other individual. Obviously, this halachic organ donor society espouses such an approach. Others disagree. Others disagree vehemently. Rabbi Bleich, I think, is one of those individuals who disagrees vehemently, and he quotes other poskim, many other poskim that seem to support his contention. He says that a person is absolutely alive even if his brain stem is dead, because of all the other issues that we've discussed, even if he doesn't have independent respiration, if his heart is beating, if his hypothalamus is working, he can't be defined as dead. And there are other poskim who say it's a safek. It's a sfeika d'dina. They throw up their hands and they say we don't know how to determine a person's status, whether he's alive or dead. We don't have such a kaviyah. We don't have a koveya. So if and when Mashiach comes, so the Sanhedrin will gather together and will be able to be koveya, exactly what determines life, what determines death. But until then, it's a sfeika d'dina. So you have to be machmir. That shita basically is saying the same thing as those who are machmir. It's just they're not going so far. They're not saying that brain death is completely meaningless. They're saying we don't know. So if we don't know, so then we have to be machmir anyway because of the sfeika d'dina. Yeah, but there's pikuach nefesh. Yeah, but there's a suffix over here. So the suffix ritzicha is not going to be doch pikuach nefesh. Ritzicha is one of those averas that pikuach nefesh does not trump. Right. So for the suffix is the ritzicha, maybe we're not going to be megal on the pikuach nefesh. We're not going to be machmir in pikuach nefesh and be megal on the suffix ritzicha. Yes.
Let's say that I know this is very unheard of, but let's say they realize that this person is about to die, so the person who they is a heart match is literally in the room next door. So is it mutter to bring them next to each other as soon as the guy's heart stops beating, take out his heart, put it in the other guy? Is that mutter?
You would have to ask the doctors if medically that can be done.
Let's
if
say
it can be done, absolutely, what's the problem?
Don't we say you're not allowed to cut up a dead body? Or?
Oh, no. Yisur of Nivul HaMeis, as we were describing before, Mishum Pikuach Nefesh, I don't think that would be a problem. Now, keep in mind, if the dead person doesn't want to donate his organs, we're not going to force him to do that.
Yeah.
We're not going to, about Karcho, take his organs out. If he says, look, I know there's this person who needs a heart, but I want my heart. I want to be buried with my heart. So, we can't take his heart away from him. So you might say, but is he a bialim over his heart after he's dead? I think it's hard to believe that we would not abide by the wishes of the dead person if he really doesn't want the heart to be used. But if he does want the heart to be used, which is exactly what the Halachic Organ Donor Society wants you to do, they give out the cards, and they want you to write away that in the event of a catastrophic accident, chas v'shalom, that a person is willing to give over their organs to someone else. So he willingly did it. He willingly said that you should be able to do it. So then l'chora, it's a mitzvah. It would be a wonderful thing. But again, it's only if we determine that he's dead. So if medically what you're saying is possible, that if the two of them are in the same room, that, you know, they could really do that, it might be a little too complicated to cut everything out. And the heart is a complicated organ. So really, to be able to do that in seconds before the heart is going to start to die, to decay, some of the cells are going to die. We're not talking about absolute death, but it's not going to be as good.
And also, what about, there's certain organs that are not life-saving?
Yes, we'll get to that. Okay. Yeah.
So based upon what you said to Herschel, then if there are organs, I don't know so much about the other organs in your body, if there are organs that are okay after you're dead.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. Very good point. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. David.
Isn't there a problem if you're taking out organs and you're saving them for some type of future pikuach nefesh and could happen theoretically? Because it's very rare that you have a case like that where you have two people in the same room and you know who it is. But it seems like whenever they take out these hearts, they always take them out and they put them away. And then people
the truth is, the way my perception, I don't know the Messias that well, but my perception is they don't just put them away. Generally, a person gets on a registry. If a person needs a heart transplant, they get on a registry. And then when a person dies in whatever town, so they know what's going to happen, they put it on ice for a short time, a day or two or whatever. But there are people waiting that they're literally dying to get that heart. Right? So when there's a motorcycle accident, a couple of hundred miles away, so then they arrange, they can't run to the hospital at that moment,
right.
But they try to arrange the heart transplant as soon as possible. So it's not like they're storing them for the future. We know who's going to get whatever heart. But even if they're storing them for the future, that's a whole other issue. You know, what you're referring to is the Isser of Nivul HaMeis, is the Isser of Nivul HaMeis pushed aside if there's no chola b'faneinu, there's no chola in front of us. So many poskim suggest, b'zman hazeh, this whole idea that there's no chola b'faneinu. I mean, the world is a global village, so you can't really say that there's no chola b'faneinu. There are many people throughout the world who need a heart transplant. So you're only going to put the heart on ice for a couple of days. I don't even think it's going to be a week. You'll find someone pretty quickly who needs that heart. So l'chora, it's a case of chola b'faneinu. If the person allows his heart to be donated, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't be able to donate that heart, as long as you would assume that the person is dead. That's the whole issue. If the person is not dead, so then there will be a serious question of taking out that heart and killing that individual, even if you're taking only the chayesho away from that person. Yes?
Leaving out American laws, isn't there a thing regarding someone who doesn't want to take medical treatment that needs? Try to force them or something?
That's a complicated issue. It depends what kind of life the person is leading, meaning if he's expected to die, but you're going to extend his chayesha, meaning he'll live for another 6 months, let's say, if less than, most of them say the chayesha means up until 12 months. He's going to live a little bit longer, but it's only 6 months, and the person says, just let me die in dignity. In that circumstance, there are many poskim who say that his wishes are adhered to. It won't force him to take that kind of treatment. But you're extending chayesha. Yeah, but the person has a right to say his chayesha. Normally when you extend the chayesha, he's going to live with pain. He's dying from something. So there are poskim who suggest that the person is allowed to determine that he doesn't want to live with so much pain. So to say that I don't want to live at all, the person can live for another 3 years with pain. I don't know if the person is a bialim to say that. But to extend his life for chayesha, maybe a person is more in control in terms of that he doesn't want that kind of treatment. And they talk about what happens if you have a treatment that could give you chayei olam, but without the treatment, the person is only going to live chayei sha, so what's the halacha there? Suffic chayei olam versus chayei sha, these are complicated questions.
But they would definitely chayei olam, so can you...
Definite chayei olam.
Yeah, can you extend that to...
Definite chayei olam, the person doesn't want to be treated, why not? People are crazy. I think
you'd
probably say,
but with ideas,
it's a halacha. Sorry?
Can you extend that to someone else's life? What were you saying about it before? If the person doesn't want to sign off on doing an organ transplant, you can definitely save someone else's life for the heart transplant. But you didn't want
to. I don't think everyone wants to give their heart. I don't think Batal Daito Eitzel Kaladim would apply, because not everyone wants to give their organs away.
So he doesn't want it.
Okay.
But why does he have, not the violence aspect, but he would have to be forced to save his life, save the other person's life?
Why isn't he forced based on the Din of Pikuach Nefesh?
It's not as goof
anyway.
But maybe
we should just be taking away organs from all dead people to give them to other people.
I'm just saying, we say our bodies are not ours. They're not ours when we're living, when we're dead. That's
right. Interesting, yeah.
I think an answer to them would be that we say that a matna shtivmara has a din of pikuach nefesh itself, because otherwise they're going to give up hope.
They'll go crazy.
Right.
So
I think that
we had the steering gitten, right?
Right. So the fact that this is a matna shtivmara themselves, they would, if they know that.
So if they think people are going to take away their organs, they're going to have they're going to go crazy close to me.
Very relevant.
I think quite an interesting idea. Maybe I don't know.
Is it matna shtivmara?
I don't know. I think you can answer simply that when the person is dead, he's not mechuyav mitzvah, and he has no mitzvah to give nefesh. As long as he's alive, he has no chiyuv to give his organs. Right? So when are you exactly going to be kofin him to give the organs? If halachically you define him as alive, so then he has every right to say he doesn't want to give his organs. if halachically the final is dead, so then what? You can't be kofim anyway. You don't have mitzvahs. So what exactly are you going to do? So in other words, you'll say, so he's not a buyer over his goof, so I'll steal the organs from him.
It's not him anymore. We're saying that after he died, it's no longer him because the neshama's on it, so it's not him. It's an empty vessel. So if it's an empty vessel anymore, it's not him. Who are you stealing from? You're stealing from an ownerless object.
Yeah, when the goof nefesh applied to the doctor, it's not to him.
Meaning the doctors would be mechuyev to take the organs of someone else.
And if we're actually saying, if we actually are agreeing that he's dead, he's no longer violent over his body, then why wouldn't? It's not like.
I don't know. Look, practically speaking, it's not going to happen because in this circumstance, there's enough of a machlokas in the postgame that a person will say, "I don't treat myself as dead until whatever." Right. So practically, it's not going to happen. So I hear the theoretical question, but practically, it's not going to be an issue. Mechaim.
So everything we've been talking until now is it's at the person that wants to give the organs.
Right.
So what if you're a Jewish person and a guy, and you need the heart transplant or the lung transplant, and the guy can
give
you the same.
That's a very good question. So I think all the posts can say that even if you'll assume that brain death is not actual death, and we can't force a person to take the organs. Maybe it's improper to give one's organs until one is actually dead, but it would be mutter to take a heart transplant from someone. Bain goy vein Jew. Meaning if a Jew bequeaths his organs, he agrees to donate his organs, he follows those poskim who assume that he is dead, so there's no issa to take those organs because the organs were taken out anyway. What's the issa? The issa is to take out the organs, to kill the person. But if they're going to quote unquote kill the person, l'shitaska, so you have not done anything if you take the organs. So there's no question to be on the list for the heart transplant that would be mutter. The question is whether one should actually donate their heart for such a purpose. Yes?
It would be an innocent hanah, like for murder?
Not a hanah for murder? No, because that murder took place anyway. You are deriving benefit after the fact. So that's not, you're not being nana from that murder. You're not being there from that murder. The murder took place, and the murder was going to take place anyway. This ritzicha sounds terrible, right? This ritzicha was going to take place anyway. So you're not being nana from that murder. Nana from the murder means you did something special to be nana from that murder. But if someone else
put my name on the list,
you put your name on the list. That's because it's going to happen anyway. Right? It's going to happen anyway. Someone's going to get that heart, so why shouldn't I be the one to get that heart? And it is possible it's a non-Jew. Right?
And
it is possible it's a non-Jew.
You don't know that you're going to be murdered. You might just die naturally. You put me on the list. You don't know.
You put yourself on the list, you don't know whose heart is going to be taken out, correct?
Right, and you don't know that the guy you're getting from is going to be murdered, and there will be a sort of a non-anyway.
I hear you. Okay, let's talk about some of the other transplants. Not the liver and heart transplant. I think those are the two organs that they say really need oxygenation to remain alive. I mean, I think everything needs oxygen to some extent. But the question is, how quickly can you harvest them, and how can you store them? So the other organs, specifically a kidney, a cornea, the eye. I think they've also started to transplant skin and gum. There's dental work that people do. There are sometimes that the person needs gum tissue put into their mouths, so they take the gum tissue from cadavers as well. So all these other kinds of transplants are from dead people. There's no issue. You don't have to. The person doesn't have to be breathing in order to take out these organs or these parts of the body. So it's important to use these parts of the body. So clearly, if we'd be talking about pikuach nefesh here, if the person without the kidney is going to die, so then there's not really much of a question that you can take the kidney. I mean, let's say a person has only one kidney, and the kidney, and he's on dialysis. And dialysis, can a person just be on dialysis forever?
It's hard.
At a certain point, it becomes very difficult. Then he's going to deteriorate. So they want to do a kidney transplant in order to extend his life. So l'chor, that is pikuach nefesh. So if you don't have to keep the other individual breathing on the respirator to take out the kidney, the chor, there's not much of a shiloh. Why? What iser should there be bichlal? If there's no iser etzicha, so what iser should there be? So the postim have pointed out, well, there are issues. One is a mitzvah kvura. There's a mitzvah kvura sameis. Kikavet Gerena Bayom Ahu. The Gemara in Sanhedrin on that Membav and Beis discusses this. This is a pasuk in Parashas Kisetz, and it's actually talking about Haruge Bezdin. There's a discussion in the Gemara: is there a mitzvah d'arais of kavura for non-Haruge Bezdin? Is there a mitzvah of kavura? Maybe not. So the Rambam happens to pass on this mitzvah d'arisa. We assume that it's a mitzvah d'arisa kavura. So little mitzvah kavura, that's a very important thing. But the makom pikuach nefesh is not much of a question. A cornea transplant, though, is that pikuach nefesh? Not really. Gum tissue, it's not that's not really pikuach nefesh. But if the mitzvah kavura, pikuach nefesh certainly is going to be docha that. But if there's no pikuach nefesh, so there is a mitzvah kavura. So maybe it should be us to take these parts of the body as well. Moreover, there's an iser to get hana from the mace. Or maybe I should say, is there an iser hana? Is there an iser hana from a mace? The answer is yes. The question is, what kind of a mace? But the Gemara of Zara and Chavtes and the Beis derives from the Zera Shava. The pasuk is Atama Sham Miriam Eti Kaver Sham, and the pasuk by Egla Rufa says Varfu Sham Es Egla Banochas. We dash in Sham Sham, just like Egla Rufa is Asura Bahana. How is an Egla Rufa Asura Bahana? What's the mocha for that? The Gemara says Kapora Ksiv Boke Kachim. The Egla Rufa is compared to Kachim because it says Kaprena. So kapara siba kachim. So the egla roof is asubana. So sham sham tells me that human beings who are mesim are also asubana because an egla roof, because a mes is compared to an egla roof, which in turn is compared to kachim. That's what you might have observed. So one is not allowed to derive any benefit from a mes. It's an isra na deraisa. Presumably, it's an isra deraisa to be nenem in a mes. And thirdly, there's an isra of nivul hames, as you mentioned. I think hardly mentioned that. The Gemara in Bava Basra, interesting Gemara. The Gemara quotes the Braisa and the Kuf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, both on Kuf Nun Dalet and on Kuf Nun Hay. The Braisa says that there was someone who apparently got a Yerusha from his father, or a number of brothers who got a Yerusha from the father, and one of the sons sold that Yerusha, part of that Yerusha, and then he died. There was a whole question whether he was a Gadol when he sold that Yerusha. He was like right. He was right around Bar Mitzvah. He was like 13. The question was he a gadol or not? So he clearly had shanim. He was over 13. If not, there was no discussion. The shaila was: did he have simanim? Did he have shtei saras? If he's not a gadol, so then his mekach u'memka wouldn't be valid. So the other brothers can take back that mechira. So they asked Rabbi Akiva if they could be bodek the mace. Can they be bodek the mace to see if he had shtei saras? So Rabbi Akiva answered, he said, first of all, you're not going to find anything because a mace disintegrates, a mace changes. So just because you see something, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. I'm not exactly sure what that means. If there were hairs there, then the hairs wouldn't go anywhere.
I think hair and nails still grow.
Hair and nails still do grow. Okay, interesting. So that's the first thing he said. And then he said, and besides, you can't be menavel the mace anyway. What kind of a... Eilecha nivel gadol mizeh. They're going to be bodek the mace, undress the mace just to see if he has shtei saras. So there's an isser of nivel hames. I think the poskim assume that's an isser deraisa. So what are we going to do? If there's pikuach nefesh, so any one of these isurim is going to be pushed off. The mitzvahs kavura, the isser hanah ben hames, the isser nivel hames, any of these isurim or mitzvahs are going to be pushed off. So the question is, let's say you have a transplant. You want to do some kind of transplant, which is not for pikuach nefesh. Let's say dental work, to put gum tissue into the person has some kind of deformity in the mouth, some kind of it's a pretty serious root canal. Whatever, they have to do some kind of serious work in the mouth, and they have to implant gum tissue from a cadaver. So why should I be mutter? Can you be menavel the mace to take up the gum tissue from him? Is it bittul mitzvah kavura? Is it an issur of nenem in a mace? So what's the happen? Yeah.
Two questions. Number one, it says in the Gemara that someone who's blind is considered kumis.
All right, so the post can do discuss that, whether a cornea is viewed as pikuach nefesh.
What about one eye versus if he's completely
blind? I was thinking of that, right. If he's completely, would they do a transplant for one eye? I think there are enough people who are blind who would need
at least one eye.
I'm not sure. If they would do a transplant even on one eye, so then it's a double push, that's not pikuach nefesh. Even if you assume that a suma is kemes, but that's only if you assume mamish b'shnei
nine. If you said that you're allowed to donate, let's say, if someone passes away, a Jewish person, they're allowed to donate their eyes. First of all, you're only allowed to donate your eyes if you know bada that it's going to somebody who's lacking in both eyes. And second of all, you're only allowed to donate if you know it's going to a Jew.
The second, the answer to the second question is you will not be able to determine it. You won't be able to determine
it. How does that play out?
So I'm not sure that that's necessarily an issue. Can you only donate if you know that it's going to someone who's blind? It's because of the Dwarf Manfish? I don't think so. I think you have a right to donate. Even if it's not going only for the Dwarf Manfish, you're still going to help someone. No question, it's a chesed. Right? I don't think it's a problem. If you're mochel, whatever nivel is involved in taking out the eye, so even if a person is not a bailam on his guf, that means he's not a bailam to do chavala. If he's not chavala lachar misa is not chavala. You're not damaging yourself. You're not drawing blood from a living person. Yes.
And also, nowadays they have something, I'm not 100% familiar with it, but basically the umbilical cord, they try and preserve it.
Stem cell.
In case the person needs it later on for reason.
Yeah.
So are you high it's not a person, but like, are you high up to like bury it or dispose of it some way? Or are you allowed to keep it in case?
After the time that the doctors say that you have to keep it?
Yeah, sometimes they actually preserve it longer.
Meaning, doctors say there's no problem anymore. We're not afraid of any.
I mean, people pay large amounts of money just to preserve it. That's what I was told.
Right.
I'm saying.
So, are you mechuyev to preserve it or not?
Even allowed to because it's part of the body and it's no longer attached anymore? And like, what's the?
No, but again, there would be a mitzvah kavura or a chiyuv kavura, but there would be no chiyuv kavura if you're doing it for the purpose of pikuach nefesh, a potential pikuach nefesh. Why would that be a problem? I don't think that would be a problem. So there are several answers given to this question. One answer is maybe we should take not from a Jew, but rather from a Goy. Maybe these halachos, the mitzvahs kvura, might not apply to Goyim. Maybe the Isser of Hanom and Ames would not apply to Goyim either. Maybe the Isser of Nidal and Ames also wouldn't apply to Goyim. So this is a whole discussion. It's a discussion unto itself. The issue... the issue of mitzvahs kavura, so most Rishon Taka hold that the mitzvahs kavura is only to a Yisrael and not to a Goyim. But the issue of Nenem and Ame is not at all clear. So Mamash and Machlokas Rishonim and Akatz al Akatz. Some Rishonim say there is an issue of Hanam and Ame from a Goy, even from a Goy. Because they say, but Tamasham Miriam happened to have been Jewish, but who said, did the Pasuk say something about Yisrael? No. So she applied to a Goy as well. Others say, no, Miriam was a Yisraelist. So maybe the Yisra Hanam and Ames only applies to Miriam, the Chadovet, only to a Yisraelis, to a Yisrael, and not to others. The Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeia, in Simen Shin Mem Tes, in Sif Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin said there's an Yisra of Hanam and Ames even from a Goy. But the Pesach Tshuva quotes from some Achronim that maybe there's room to be made. Maybe even if the Yisra Hanam and Ames applies to a Goy, maybe it's only an Yisra Rabbana to begin with. Rabbana, you just told me it's a Gzera Shava. Shom Shom. Okay, so that's the question. Do we take the Gzera Shava seriously? Is that mean it's Daraisa? Maybe the Chachamim only found a smach. It's just an asmach. That's really the Rabbanan. The Pesach Tshuva there in Yeredei and Shimon Pes quotes from some Achronim that maybe the Yisra of Hanom and Ames is only the Rabbanan, and therefore b'makom chol and b'makom tzorich maybe it should be mutter. So there's a lot to be makel for here. If you're going to use the gum tissue or the evarim. The organs of a dead person of a dead guy, so maybe there's no Isra of Hanam and Ames from an Akam anyway. And even if there is an Isra of Hanam and Ames, maybe it's only Midera Bonin of a Makam Choleh. Perhaps it might be Mutter. Others want to suggest that maybe the Isra of Hanam and Ames won't apply here at all, because this is called Hana'ah Shelo Kedarkam. It's not a normal way to get Hanam and Ames. What exactly is the normal way to get Hanam and Ames? I'm not sure. Right, it's an interesting svar. It's not the normal way to get Hanam and Ames. Maybe you could say when they started doing transplants it wasn't so normal, but is this such an abnormal way of getting Hanam and Ames? I'm not sure. That's another svara that they give. And the final svara that they give is, who says this is Nenem and Ames at all? Why not? You're taking from the mace, right? Yeah, but you're taking a piece from the mace and you're putting it into a chai. So if you're putting it into a chai, maybe you're bringing it back to life. Maybe we don't view this as Nenem and Ames because when you get the Hana'ah, the piece is not dead. That's not called Nene Benames. Interesting svar. So for one of these reasons, maybe more than one, putting some of these reasons together, I think many post in Amegu that the best thing to do is to try to get gum tissue from a guy. So you would say, but how can I determine it's from a guy? So I think in America we assume that Rove Mace and Magoyim, so we can assume that the mace is probably a guy. We can follow Rove, we can assume that it's from a guy. and then we'd be allowed to accept the organ or to accept the gum tissue or the skin, etc. That's from the Gaisha Meis, because it could be that there's no Isser of Hanom and Ameis Aklam anyway, and the Mitzvah's Kvura might only apply to a Yisrael. In terms of Nivul Ameis, it probably doesn't apply here at all, because once the Goy is Mochel his body, once he donates his body for medical use, so presumably the holding of Nivul Ameis wouldn't apply either.
What about from Aaron?
To what?
What about from Aaron? Can we donate these things? Can we donate money as some tissue?
That I think would be mutter. Why should that not be mutter? You're allowing them, if you're mochel on the nivel, so then that would be okay. Hanom and ames is not for you to determine, right? You're saying it's mutter for them to be nene. So just one second. If you say it's mutter for them to be nene, so then does that remove the isser of hanom and ames? I'm not sure that you're buying on that isser. So it could be for Yisrael to donate these things, you would then get into the problem of being nenem, of being nenem mace. Even if the mace allows you to be nenem from him, I'm not sure that he would be allowed to tell you to do that. Unless you assume, like those opinions in the Pesach Tshuva, that the Yisrael of Hanam and Amace is only with the Rabbanah to begin with, so then it would be mutter, because Makam Chola, that Yisrael of Rabbanah would fall away. But if you'd say it's an Yisrael Deraisa, so I'm not sure that the Mechila of the Yisrael would help to bypass that Yisrael. And in terms of the mitzvahs kfura as well, but you can be mochel your mitzvahs kfura. If a person tells his descendants that he doesn't want them to bury him, so is it mutter not to bury? I think not. I think the mitzvahs kfura requires you to bury the mace, even if he tells you not to bury, even if he says I don't require you to bury. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure that there would be a heaven. I'm not sure.
And also, is there?
Unless you would say that if you're donating, chances are if we follow Rove, you can assume that the Goyim are going to be getting this gum tissue. So Goyim are going to be getting the gum tissue. Maybe they don't have an issue of Nenim and Ames anyway. They don't have an issue for it either. I'm not sure. I have heard some people who have said that even if you don't want to write on the organ donor card that you're willing to give up your heart or liver, you could still donate other things. So are they only talking about kidneys? They're talking about things that are for pikuach nefesh, or are they talking about donating skin and donating gums, etc.? I'm not sure.
Yes. And also, is there not an idea that if there's a specific limb you're going to die, it's also called pikuach nefesh?
Sakonas eiver.
Right. Is that or not applicable?
Not necessarily. Not in this context. I mean, certainly to be mechalas haShabbos. There are many Rishonim who hold that for Sakana Seva. We're not going to be Mechalas HaShabbos. Bizman Hazeh, we assume that infection to one limb is going to cause an infection to the whole body. Perhaps we're afraid. So maybe we'll be more makeup Bizman Hazeh. But technically speaking, for Sakana Seva, we don't assume that that's Bikuach Nefesh for the whole body.
The whole context of our discussion is coming from being Mechalas HaShabbos and we're applying everything else. So why would we make a distinction?
But I just told you that Sakana Seva is not Bikuach Nefesh.
No, we were saying Sakana Seva.
It's not Docha Shabbos.
It's not Docha
Shabbos. That's the Pashup Shad. I'm telling you, Poskim say, there have been terrible stories of people who have had arms cut off, they put their hands in the wrong places or whatever. So many Poskim are Mekel in such circumstances. I mean, people want to be Mekel anyway, because if you don't reattach the arm on Shabbos, it's not going to be able to be reattached after Shabbos, and then the person has to live with psychological issues or whatever, but the cool is not based on the psychological trauma that the person is going to live with. It's based on the fact that we assume that there'll be some kind of infection if you don't.
But if that doesn't apply, then you don't deal with it. Like, for example, if there's some sort of issue where something with eyes.
Eyes are different. Eyes, the reason why we're very medical in eyes is because there could be a terrible infection, and the eyes are very close to the brain. So I think there's much more of a danger.
Not all issues are a matter of, if something's open that can be infected. There are other issues that. That
you're saying the fact that Suma is Kemeis? These are complicated issues. Really, these are complicated issues. I'm just trying to give a basic overview so that we can understand the basic issues. But, if a person has a particular Shaila, so they really would have to answer this.
So this might not be such a great question, but I don't know anything about it, so I want to know. I know we're allowed to kill animals for food, so what about killing animals for their transplants? Nowadays, you can have valve transplants from pigs and other types of animals. So is that just okay straight up? There's no issue at all with that? With killing animals for any type of organ?
Well, certainly if it's because medic, there's no question. I think it's very common to use parts of animals for different procedures. I think it's very common. I think we assume it is okay. Okay, we're talking about humans over here. Can you take organs from humans?
Sure.
Can you take organs from other? I don't think a dog heart is going to help us too much. You know,
right.
So,
heart.
Right. So there are certain things that we right. I'm not sure. I mean, we have to look at the genetic makeup of the skin of animals and the gum and tissue of animals. I think it's a little different than humans. So that's why it's not done. Maybe for valves it is done. I really don't know. You have to ask some of the doctors.
It is done for valves,
okay. Yeah.
Finally. Two questions. Are there any animals because of tumor we're not allowed to have them inside of us?
No, so based on the last comment that I made, if you bring it back to life, so to speak, right? You're bringing the organ back to life by putting it into the chai, so maybe the whole issue of tumas kohanim would go away as well. You're saying if a kohen needs this gum tissue, it's not pikuach nefesh, so maybe he shouldn't be able to get the gum tissue because he'll be metame himself to this mace. I don't think that's much of an issue.
It's not a physical thing. It's something an organ from someone who is tame. It's not tuma, is it? Like,
well, it is tame if the person is dead. If it's tuma goy, there still could be tuma because a goy, there's a machlokes whether they say akamar on the tame the ohel, but they're definitely tame the magu the master. They're definitely the tame the touching. So there would be a tuma even from a goyish cadaver. But again, you're attaching it to a living being, so would that be called tumah? Not so clear. That's something that would be called tumah. I think certainly if it's b'makom choli, saying the Isser of Tumas Kohanim is daraisa, so how can we have a dispensation for the Isser of Tumas Kohanim, b'makom choli? I think it could be medical for this other shita. Maybe it could be mitzayr. There is one sheet that the Taka holds that may say Akam would not matari the Magra b'masa either. The Shach in Yeridei is very much against that sheet. He assumes it's Deber Pashat B'Makom Masa Le'Alatani. There is one sheet of Mishal Melech quotes that holds that Matani B'Makom Masa either. So maybe you can put that together with this other concept that if you're attaching it to a live person, maybe that's not called Tumah, so maybe it should be Mishal. Okay.